Welcome to Shattering Myths, especially on this day, which is Passover. It's a program devoted to the most important and to the fastest growing segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to know who is working against our interests, to understand how and why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning such schemes, even if they are religious or political, isn't hateful, it's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, particularly on this day, Passover, and tomorrow and the following day, the celebration of Matzah and Bikurim, because its liberating and empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-376-45. We're going to begin with about 30 minutes of news and then going to transition into what God has to say about this day, which is Passover. The news starts off religious. Reuters is reporting that a tired and somber-looking Pope Francis, as to why they would speak of him being tired and somber-looking, is a mystery to me. But nonetheless, the journalist at Reuters thought that you ought to know that he was tired and somber. He led a Palm Sunday service before more than 100,000 adoring fans. Opening the adoring fans was my editorial comment. Opening two packed weeks of activities, including Easter and the canonization of two popes. Well, the Torah says that 4 days before Passover is when the Passover lamb enters the home. Yahusha walked into Jerusalem 4 days before Passover. Passover is today. So, I guess if you were to spot this pope 3 days, a branch versus a palm, and a sun god or two, he'd have been right instead of wrong. There is nothing on earth, nothing on earth, that God despises more than corrupting his testimony about the meetings that he has established between us and him. Passover is the first of these meetings. He has seven of them. And there is nothing more important to God than us coming to understand what these days represent, and participating in them by acknowledging his invitation. When a religious leader corrupts this by speaking of Palm Sunday, which is religious rubbish, and of Easter Sunday, which is an absolute and utter abomination to God, and doesn't acknowledge Passover, Matzah, and first fruits, firstborn children, trying to conceal what God conveyed while promoting what man has conceived, he becomes the single most despicable individual on the planet. If you're looking for repulsive, you'll find him. He may be tired and somber looking, but from God's point of view, he is an abomination. Repulsive and disgusting. And if you side with him, you're going to appear similarly. Hello, Larry. Well, I understand that you're taking today off in observance of the Torah's instructions, which is a wise thing to do. What's your opinion of Pope Francis?
Well, I think that he's one of those few people that won't die when his physical body ceases to exist.
That's correct.
I think he'll be tormented forever in Sheol.
Yeah,
and
that is true.
That's what I think of him. And obviously, I'm just looking at Yahweh's words. As they're not my opinions. What he says. And they're in a lot of trouble.
Have you ever noticed anything that Yahweh said that contradicted something else he has said?
No.
Have you ever found any place where Yahweh told us something happened when we have later found out that it did not happen that way?
No.
Have you ever found any instance when Yahweh said, this is what is going to happen, and it failed to happen?
No.
So you would say that the God, Yahweh, who authored the Torah, has a pretty good track record for being consistent and for being right.
Oh, I would say he was 100% of both. You know.
So when Yahweh says there's absolutely no forgiveness for someone who promotes lifelessness in his name, as is this Pope, you would then conclude that that statement is reliable.
Absolutely.
So we really don't have to speculate as to whether or not, even though it's not our job to determine who ceases to exist upon the their earthly demise, who gets to live forever with Yahweh, and who gets to spend an eternity tormented by fellow demons in Sheol, based upon Yahweh's testimony, this boy is in more trouble than just being a little tired and somber looking.
I would say so. You know, anybody, you know, he calls Ashur an abomination.
Yeah.
One of the things that they had to do when they took part in Pesach, when they got finished way back during the days of King Hezekiah, they went out and they tore down all the Ashura vestiges that would be Easter vestiges.
Right. Yeah, Ashura is directly associated with Easter. There is, it's three quarters of Ashura is just pure Easter. It's the basis for Easter. It even used one of Ashura's names, Esther, in the celebration of Easter, making God's statement against this religious sun goddess myth an abomination to him. But beyond that, she is the basis of the Mother of God and the Queen of Heaven, which is an essential part of Roman Catholicism and of Orthodox Christianity. And that's the other quarter of Ashura.
Yeah, well, you know, and you know, that's they used to in the Lord's Covenant. You know, they'd go out there and they'd worship that bull with the sun between its horns. And
yes,
as you know, each year that Easter happens, the sun is in constellation with Taurus, the bull.
What did God do during the time of the Exodus when Moshe was up meeting with him, getting dictation really of the Torah directly from Yahweh, and he returns to find a significant number of the Israelites that have just been saved from the religious and political realm of Egypt. He finds them worshiping the sun god in the form of the golden calf with the sun disk between its horns. What did he do to them?
He was none too happy.
He annihilated them, didn't he?
Yeah,
he annihilated him. They just said,
you can look at Yasha Yahu, and it says right here in 17:8, this is from the Dead Sea Scrolls, so it's extant. So then they shall not regard or accept altars of gods that are the work of the hands, nor what their fingers have made. They will not look or delight in Ashura and sun images and idols.
Yeah.
You know, which is all Ishtar or Easter is about. And I just
correct.
Can't imagine people think they're pleasing the creator of the universe.
Well, he made himself pretty clear.
The opposite of what he said.
Yeah, he's made himself pretty clear. If you're the perpetrator of such lies, then you're going to spend your eternity separated from God, which means you're going to spend it in Sheol. And if you are the victim of such lies, as were the case of most of those Israelites who were chose to worship the sun god, you're going to die. Now, we all die, but some of us, upon our mortal death, are immediately transformed into children of Yahweh and get to spend eternity with him. Recreated, if you will, spiritually in his image. And
beings of energy.
Right,
life.
Yeah. Yeah, and many are going to be awakened. In the story that Yashaya tells of America, he says that, you know, you're going to be awakened abruptly, and those who were belligerent, those who were in opposition to him, that they're going to be tormented forever by the inmates of Sheol, which are Satan and his demons. And then the vast majority of people, the victims, will simply cease to exist. Their souls will be annihilated upon their demise. There will be no punishment, no heaven nor hell for them, and that's what happened with the sun god worshipper. So if you are a sun god worshipper, if you go to church on Sunday, if you celebrate Easter Sunday, you need to know that if you are simply victimized by the religion, you go and you honor the sun in this way, that upon your death, your soul will cease to exist. And while that's not good, it's certainly squandering the opportunity of the covenant, it's not bad either. Bad is what happens if you're a pope, if you're a pastor. If you're up there before the people and inviting them to attend Easter sunrise services, you're inviting them to embrace the Asherah, the right. sun god imagery. If you're up there and or you call a radio program and you're promoting Easter Sunday in Christianity, then your faith is entirely different. And you're not going to cease to exist upon your demise. You're going to spend eternity in Sheol. That's what God said. There has to be a consequence for leading people astray. And that is where we are. So here, returning just a moment to Roman Catholicism and the Vatican, the faithful waved palm fronds and olive branches. The olive branches are at least accurate. Wrong day, wrong purpose. But the palm fronds, wholly inaccurate. The reason that it's called Palm Sunday and the waving of the palm fronds is because that is a direct derivative of the Babylonian religion. The Babylonian religion, to celebrate Ashura Day, waved palm fronds. Yahweh had no such instruction, and there was no such instruction in Jerusalem on this day. The square to celebrate this, rather than talking about Yosef, a name that they'd never use, arrival in Jerusalem in accordance with the Torah 4 days before Passover, the Pope got into his white Jeep Popemobile, and he rode through the Vatican. Welcome back to Shattering. This report from Reuters concludes with the following statement. Palm Sunday marked the day that the Bible says Jesus rode into Jerusalem to the cheers of crowd before the Christians believe that he rose from the dead. That's not what the even the Christian New Testament says. I mean, beyond the fact that there is no one named Jesus, and you won't find the name Jesus even in the Greek accounts of the Christian beginnings. Bible is the name of a pagan sun goddess. Beyond those two errors, what both the Hebrew testimony and the Torah and the prophets present is that Yosha came into Jerusalem 4 days before Passover. Now, one of the most powerful prophecies in the whole of the Torah is found in Daniel 9. Daniel means God judges and vindicates. In the ninth chapter, you'll read a prophecy of where Daniel was told the exact number of days between the time of the edict for them to, for Yehudim, to be freed from slavery in Babylon, to the time that the Messiah, Yahusha, would arrive in Jerusalem. And that day happens to be in 33 CE. It was a Monday, because in 33 CE, Passover was a Friday, which means it began Thursday evening. Is Monday Sunday?
No.
No. Yahweh tells us that he wants the Passover lamb to come into the home 4 days before Passover because he wants the family to become acquainted with it, to observe it, to care for it.
Exactly what Yahusha did.
Yes. Son of a gun. Yeah, we're still consistent. Yeah, well, everything he says is what we find materialized. So this idea that it's Palm Sunday is a lie on two accounts. Number one, it didn't occur on a Sunday in 33 CE. Also, what day is today, Larry? Day of the week. What do we call it?
Today's Monday.
Yeah, okay. Which means that, and Passover in 33 CE was on a Friday, right?
That's right.
So does can you establish a day of the week to celebrate any one of the events surrounding Passover?
Well,
you say it's always on a Sunday. It's always on a Monday. Always on a Tuesday.
That would change. That would change.
Yeah, it could be. So just the whole idea of establishing their celebrations on a Sunday shows their love of the day that venerated their Lord, the sun god.
Right.
For example,
because it certainly has nothing to do with Yahusha or Yahweh's plan.
Correct. So Pesach can be celebrated any one of the 7 days of the week. It's not determined based upon a weekly schedule. It's determined based upon a lunar solar calendar. Yahweh had a very specific plan, and he told us what the first month of the year was going to be. He told us how to know when the first day of the first month of the year was occurring. And he told us on the 14th day of that first month, which was called Abib, that it would be the celebration of Passover. And since a month can start on any day of the week, the 14th day of a month can be any one of the 7 days of the week. To establish it as a Sunday just shows the extraordinary affinity that Christianity has for all things sun-related, which you read a passage there a moment ago that said, Yahweh says that those who honor the sun in this way are excluded from heaven. So it's pretty clear that this is a really stupid idea. Scripture does not say, Yahweh did not say, even the Christian New Testament doesn't say, that a fellow named Jesus rode into Jerusalem on a Sunday to create Palm Sunday. It says nothing of the sort. As for bodily resurrection, which is what Christians claim they'll be celebrating, even the Greek testimony says that God didn't die, and that there was no bodily resurrection. The very basis of the religion is an utter and complete lie. When we return to Shattering This, we will consider what God had to say. Because as Larry said, he has a consistent track record. He's always telling the truth. Welcome back to Shattering This. Before I begin to summarize Yahweh's plan, and then we go into great detail as to how he communicated it to us, I want to make certain that everyone listening knows what options are available to them. God created us with free will. He gave us a mortal life which has a time limit to it. He gave us a nesama, which is this conscience, the seat of good judgment, the place that we can exercise good judgment, where we can differentiate between that which is true and that which is false, that which is reliable and that which is not. And so, under the auspices of free will, another one of his gifts, we have the opportunity to decide, so long as we are still rational, something that political correctness wants to eliminate. But so long as we are rational, we have the opportunity to evaluate the evidence and determine whether or not religious institutions promoting the Babylonian festival of Ishtar, Easter, on Sundays are telling the truth, or whether Yahweh is dependable. It's your choice. Now, on this program, I'm going to tell you God's view of the religious alternative. which he despises. And I'm going to share with you what he has to say about his plan, his way, which is the only path to him. Now, you don't have to walk along it. You can choose the religious alternative. You can even promote the religious alternative. Or you can choose what Yahweh has to offer. The choice is yours. But understand there's a consequence associated with each of the three options. So as we consider this, you need to know that if you choose to promote Easter and Sundays and Christianity, then the consequence for doing so is that you are going to be eternally estranged from Yahweh, which means that you have been found guilty, you will be found guilty, you are committing a crime which has a punishment associated with it. This Pope is engaged in that. So many Christian evangelicals are engaged in it. Every religious advocate is engaged in it. The consequence is eternal separation from God. That place is known as Sheol. You'll find Paul there, which many Christians will find comforting until they realize that he was lying to them. The second option, you can simply be a victim. You can squander your life. Not recommended, but that option is available to you. You can just go along and say, you know, I can't believe that so many people can be wrong about this, even though God told you that most people would be wrong. If you choose to be misled, if that is your choice, the consequence is that you will have squandered the gifts that God gave you.
Well, you know, it also, if I can just speak here.
Sure. Yeah.
For people to think that the majority are correct makes Yahusha a liar when he says that few find this narrow path. So, yeah. I mean, how do you square that with, well, a billion people agree with me and you're on your own? Perhaps they could have asked Noah that, or Lot.
Yes.
Because that's where you better be.
Christianity is
a minority here.
Has been the world's most popular religion since Constantine authorized it. It has been the world's largest religion since that period of time. And so you're dealing with the most popular path, which Yahweh says is leads to death and destruction of one soul. Versus his path, which is narrow, which he says very few find. Just in Yahusha's opening statements in the Sermon on the Mount, the religion of Christianity, as is the religion of Islam, any religion that's popular, Hinduism, socialist, secular, humanism, they're destroyed. But particularly Christianity, because it claims that its religion is based upon the words and deeds of this man whose opening statements in the Sermon on the Mount destroyed their credibility. We also have Glenn, who's called in from Philadelphia. Happy Pesach, Glenn.
Yes, happy Pesach, Ariana, Larry. Okay, wow, interesting. I guess first I would make the point about the dating of Easter. I always like to run this one by. Easter is the first Sunday after the first ecclesiastical full moon after the vernal equinox. You can't get much more astrological than that.
It is true. By the way, Yahweh's testimony is he tells you that the first month is based upon the time that barley, which is a standing grain, rises and the kernel begins to form, is still green and growing and receptive. And so he's using the symbolism of grain and of bread and of which he uses throughout his testimony. And he says that's the first month of the year. And then he talks about renewal. And it's a renewal of light. Kadash is the term. And he associates renewal of light with renewal of our souls. And it's the 14th day after such renewal when barley is growing and receptive, standing grains. Yeah, so it's God's testimony and the establishment of Easter. And by the way, you know, there's a rule within the Christian establishment of Easter that Easter can never fall on Passover.
Yeah.
They change the date if it were to fall on Passover. And you know what's unbelievably stupid about that? Easter and Passover aren't days that are in conflict. They're irrelevant to one another.
Right.
It is Bukodim that Easter provides a pagan alternative for. But they don't even know what Bukodim is, so you're right. It couldn't be more pagan.
Right. The reason I actually called was it's a good time to get the clarification about you often say that God cannot die. Yes. Okay. And yes. So Christians are hearing you talk about, like, say, the Shroud of Turin, the the vapors, the transmutation of the body, that sort of thing. So and there were a lot of Christians think in terms of first death and second death. In other words, the idea that when the physical body stops breathing and the heart stops beating and the body's buried, that's the first death, and then to go to Sheol would be the second death. But you say more categorically that, the God cannot die. So, in other words, a lot of people are probably perplexed as to exactly what you're saying became of the walking, talking, physical body of Yasha. There's a semantic distinction that needs pretty careful clarification.
Well, I would agree. Well, let's do it. Yasha, as his physical body, represented the Passover lamb. And as a representing the Passover lamb, his physical body was sacrificed. His soul, however, continued to exist, and the part of him that was actually Yahweh, that was actually God, left him before his physical body died. Because Yahweh's spirit, who is spirit, cannot be associated with death. And so the comment that Yosha makes on the upright pole, which is a comment that Christians cannot reconcile, it is absolutely and wholly destructive to the religion. Yosha says, my God, why have you deserted me? Why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me?" To forsake is to leave. Why have you separated yourself from me? And at that moment, the physical body that was on the upright pole and the soul that occupied that body were estranged from God. And so even if you just look at the testimony of the eyewitnesses in the so-called Christian New Testament, it affirms what I'm saying, that God cannot die. God did not die. The spirit of Yahweh left the physical body and the soul that was hanging on the upright pole. Now, it goes way beyond that, however. When Yosha stated, my God, why have you forsaken me? He was directing our attention to the most comprehensive, the most detailed, the most accurate eyewitness account of what was happening and would happen. He was reciting the opening lines of the 22nd Mizmor, or Psalm. It begins exactly the same way. And in that Mizmor, in that Psalm, Dode, who was inspired to write it, gives us an eyewitness account of exactly what was happening and would happen on this day, which was Passover, on the next day, which was Matzah, unyeasted bread, and on the following day, which was Bukodim. And he gives us an eyewitness account all the way through, explaining precisely what was happening. So on the first point, Yosha himself acknowledges, the psalm confirms, and even the eyewitness accounts corroborate the idea that God did not die. It was a physical body and a soul there, and the spirit of Yahweh departed. God cannot die. He is immortal. He did not die. All right, now we have a body and a soul on the upright pole. You mentioned, Glenn, and you are correct, that most people determine death to be when there is no more breath. The Hebrew word for soul, nefesh, is also the Hebrew word for breath. Yosha's physical body served as the Passover lamb. The physical body died. His soul, however, did not die. And usually it's the departure of the soul, the departure of breath, that determines whether or not a person is alive or dead. The soul is our consciousness. The soul is our ability to be aware of our surroundings and to respond to our surroundings. All animals have souls, which is why animals, unlike plants, can observe and respond to their surroundings. According to the 22nd Psalm, his soul had a mission, and his soul commenced that mission on the evening of Passover. Now, before we talk about the mission that his soul commenced on the evening of Passover, which is why, Glenn, I want to tell you, it's a great question, and I'm glad that you asked for clarification for here, because this is the lie that Christians have been told to believe a pagan Babylonian religion. His physical body was then placed in a limestone tomb. God tells us in great detail that the remains of the Passover lamb shall not exist until morning, and that it is expressly to be consumed in the fire. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're answering Glenn's question, and I'm quite confident that Glenn didn't ask the question because he doesn't know the answer. He knows the answer, but realizes that going over the explanation of what occurred, being very clear and precise in accordance with Yahweh's instructions, would be very helpful for listeners to this program. So the Psalm, 22nd Psalm, the eyewitness testimony in regarding Yosha's statement, citing the Psalm, my God, why have you deserted me, proves conclusively that God had departed the body and the soul of Yosha as he hung on the upright pole. That's for a lot of reasons. One is that God can't die. And the other reason is that the soul was going to go to the place of separation from God, and you can't be separated from God if God is with you. But it also points out something that I don't think I have shared before as it relates to this particular event. One of the great problems of Christianity is it created a religion around a man, and then it recast that man as Dionysus, as Bacchus, as Osiris, for the express purpose of creating a new religion. And what they never came to recognize, because they changed his name, is that Yahusha is Yahweh saving us. That Yahusha is exactly as Yahweh presented him. That he is a diminished corporeal manifestation of Yahweh, set apart from Yahweh. The entirety of God never resided upon, in, or surrounding the man. He is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. A tiny representation of Yahweh. Go ahead, Glenn.
Christians are aware of this, at least theologians. If you're familiar with the question, the kenotic question, are you familiar mm-hmm. with the concept of the kenotic question? Where they acknowledge it, that, you know, that there is, it sort of begs the question, what can God relinquish and yet remain God? You know, this idea of the diminished corporeal manifestation, of what can God be diminished and yet remain God?
Yeah, so, unfortunately,
it's a completely foreign idea too.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, for Christians, and you know this, Glenn, that there are two issues with Christianity that preclude most Christians being able to deal with that. Even though Yahusha said it himself, the Father is greater than I. The reality is that Paul lied twice when he said that the fullness of the Godhead resided on him bodily. It's a statement. It's physically impossible. It is absurd. Paul was lying when he said so, but Christians prefer Paul's testimony to Yosha's testimony, who said the Father is greater than I.
Right.
But
right.
The foundation of Christianity, its very foundation, when it becomes a religion, is in the Council of Nicaea. an event staged and promoted by General Constantine, a pagan individual. And the purpose of the Council of Nicaea, its primary purpose, is unknown to many Christians, but the consequence is now known to all of them. The purpose was to render the Arian controversy moot. Arian recognized that Scripture and Yosha's testimony are consistent, that Yosha was begotten, and that he is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, and therefore the notion of basing a religion on him, even if you know his name, versus on Yahweh, who's the author of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, who is God, is insane. And so to create the new religion of Christianity, the purpose of the Nicene Council was to preclude anyone being aware of or embracing Arian's correct realization that Yahusha was a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, and therefore any focus on him is misplaced.
Right.
And so Christians can't deal with the fact that they pray to, if they even understood him correctly, it would be like a toenail clipping compared to the individual from whom he came.
Right. Now, before we go too far, I have to go, so I want to go back to your explanation before the break.
Okay.
Real quick, and in terms of what you described transpiring, you know,
yes.
There are a lot of Christians, given that there's inherent ambiguity in the Christian story of what transpired there, a lot of Christians would probably have no problem, you know, concurring with what you said.
Up to this point, and we will continue to detail what actually occurred so that people are aware of it and can celebrate the event appropriately when Shattering Mist continues after the break.